The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
You can put it on the board!
Woo!
Okay, we're back here for another episode of Midwest Swing. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We are part of the Zone Coverage / Cold Omaha Podcast Network. You can find Zone Coverage on Twitter at Zone Coverage MN. I am your host, Brandon Warren. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon _ Warren. And I'm joined, as always, by the producer, Tom Schreier, at TSchreier3.
Yep.
The Cold Omaha / Zone Coverage co-founder. And he's working on his lunch here, so we're not going to get too much input from him. But Tom, what's going on today?
Not too much. It was like last week. I'm munching on a little Chipotle.
And so we just came back from our meeting. We did chit-chat a little bit about our brackets, about Twitter. We very seldom do we get any actual work done at these meetings. But we did talk about the brackets, and we ended up getting down the road of Northwestern and their Cinderella. I don't want to call it Cinderella run because they had a nice season. I don't want to diminish that. But we did talk about the charismatic player who was doing interviews in the locker room, and we had deduced, actually I had deduced that it was Charlie Hall, who is the son of Brad Hall and Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who's been on Seinfeld and Saturday Night Live and a whole bunch of other fun stuff. And so naturally, that's a good segue for us to bring in Jim Sonnes, who actually went to Northwestern and I guess was probably riding a wave of a really good finish to the Big Ten tournament and at least a good first-round game, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The Vandy game was really fun. I mean, there was a lot of yelling at the TV, which is always good. Good yelling, I guess. And then the Gonzaga one may have been a couple of more expletives slipped in there, you know, throughout that game. But, I mean, hey, it's a tough way to go down for sure. But it was cool to see them come back in the second half because they looked just awful in the first half. But they brought some excitement. I got to yell about Minnesota native Sanjay Lumpkin. He's from Wayzata.
He
had a good game.
Future Timberwolves summer league body. Ooh. Sanjay Lumpkin. I'm almost sure of that.
I like that call. I mean, with Jim Peterson, that makes sense.
Yeah. I think it'll be an attaboy for Jim Peterson. But
yeah, but that was a fun game, man. I mean, yeah, and seeing Charlie Hall in the locker room too, and all the cutaways of actually Northwestern alum Julie Louis-Dreyfus. She went there, didn't graduate from there, but she did go there too. That was always cool. So it's a fun tournament, kind of on a sour note, I guess.
So. Did you have them losing to Gonzaga in the second round?
So I had Gonzaga winning it all. It was actually like an emotional hedge on my part.
Sure.
Because I knew that like if NU wins, I'll be happy. You know, I don't care about my bracket at that point. If NU loses, I still have Gonzaga winning it all. Like it wasn't the reason I picked Gonzaga to win it all, but it was definitely like a thought that crossed my mind. So I did pick them to lose. I kind of felt bad for it about it for a second. Looking at my bracket now, I feel even worse because it's awful to begin with. But, you know, it was I did kind of go with the hopefully non-homer route and pick Gonzaga.
So you trust Gonzaga, though. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, so like Number Fire's numbers love Gonzaga. They were the top ranked in our power rankings.
I think KenPom liked them too, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. And it makes sense. They have similar algorithms, KenPom and NumberFire.
Mm-hmm.
And then also another guy I talked to, his name is Ed Fang. He works for the Power Rank. His number is also like, and I think the points-based system would like Gonzaga, and that's even when accounting for strength of schedule. That kind of caused me to go towards them. The numbers like them a lot more than the public did if you're comparing, you know, tourney win percentages, stuff like that. That kind of pushed me more towards them. And I think that, I mean, I like them to begin with, but just kind of comparing our numbers with the public pushed me more towards Gonzaga.
And I can't trust them. I mean, they've broken my heart in marches before. And then they lost to BYU towards the end of the season. I don't know. I got them losing to West Virginia. In fact, what's that?
That's a really good team, West Virginia.
Yeah, Javon Carter and all those other guys. It's a really good team. I hate to brag because I know this is going to blow up in my face, but my entire Elite Eight is still intact. And actually, Florida State losing to Xavier and Minnesota falling out are my only teams in the Sweet 16 on the bottom half that aren't in there anymore, which is you know, whatever. I didn't expect either of those teams to do that much. And so I have a final four of Baylor against Arizona and Kansas against UCLA. I have Arizona over Kansas in the final. If I could do it over again, I think I'd do Kansas winning, though, just because they're so doggone deep and just a very strong team. Who do you have Gonzaga beating?
UNC. So that's UNC reasonable. But, like, that's about it. I lost Louisville. I had them beating Michigan, obviously, and then beating Kansas because Number Fire's numbers actually saw Kansas and Louisville as being kind of a toss-up in that Elite Eight game. And when you have the public heavily going towards Kansas, it kind of pushed me more towards Louisville, especially in larger pools where you want to be a little bit more contrarian. So yeah. I wound up with Louisville in the Final Four, and the other one I had that didn't quite turn out so well as Virginia. They were Number Fire's ninth-ranked team, and I thought that with Florida having the injuries they had down the stretch that might be an okay second-round game. I knew I didn't want Villanova or Duke just because they were so heavy in the public, but, I mean, that regional is just so tough. I knew I wanted to be contrarian. I just picked the wrong way. And I think that, you know, our chief analyst, Keith Goldner, loved Florida, and I think they've got a really good shot to pull it off right now.
Yeah, Florida's pretty solid. A lot of the teams left are solid. South Carolina's kind of a surprise. But they took down Duke, so you can't sleep on them at all. So you keep mentioning Number Fire, and I'm sure that people that might not know you wouldn't necessarily know why, but that's because you're one of the guys over there. And so what was your process for getting to Number Fire? I know you did some radio in southern Minnesota, and you obviously have Minnesotan roots. What was your process to getting to where you are today?
Yeah, so I started writing for Number Fire on a part-time basis. It was actually 4 years ago tomorrow. I started writing on a part-time basis, or like a freelance basis, sorry, for Number Fire. Just doing stuff while I was in college, to write about the Twins at every chance I could get, and then Major League Baseball as a whole. Started doing some football and stuff like that. And then, like you said, after graduation, I went to KATE Radio, which is in Albert Lea, Minnesota. Really cool place. I love the people there, and I loved being able to do play-by-play, which was like the reason that I got into like sports media to begin with, was I loved play-by-play so much. But with life stuff, my girlfriend got a job in Boston at Massachusetts General Hospital. I couldn't really get a radio job in Boston given the market size, and I kind of knew that.
Mm-hmm.
So I was looking to do something else. Number Fire was purchased by FanDuel, which opened up a lot of opportunities for full-time employment. So I hopped on that, and my last day at the radio station was when I got the offer at Number Fire. So it kind of worked out really well as far as timing goes. So it's more doing freelance stuff and getting superbly lucky than it was like a planned process. But I guess the luck did kind of spin in my favor, which I'm forever grateful for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we've done a couple leagues. You obviously have a very fantasy inclined job. The first one we did was through, I think, Fantasy Pros, and you represented Number Fire. I actually represented Rotographs, although I am writing for Fantasy Pros now as well. That was a real fun draft. I don't have the results in front of me, but as far as how your team panned out, I feel like you were in the chat pretty excited with how everything panned out for you.
Yeah, I really was. I like my team mostly because, like, if I can start a draft with Bryce Harper, I was picking 10th. I think I was at the turn. And if I can get Bryce Harper at 10 in a points league, like, game on, man. I will take that every day. I know that there are concerns around last year, but a lot of that, I think, stemmed from his shoulder injury that played through from, like, June until August and eventually started to hit a little bit better, higher exit velocity and stuff like that later in the season. So I'm kind of banking on Harper for a full rebound. I think I took Miguel Cabrera within the second round at the turn there, too, who I love. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to take as a first-round guy this year in 12-team drafts. I think he is a phenomenal person – or phenomenal player. And then I went Giancarlo Stanton and Yu Darvish at the 3-4. So, like, those four are really kind of my guys, and I don't want to go too far into, like, hitting quote-unquote my guys. Like, I'm not going to take Yasmani Tomas in the fifth round because I'm not an idiot.
Right.
But, like, those are players I thought were at least decent values where they were taken. So, like, if I could start that way, I'm never going to complain too much, for sure.
Yeah, I really enjoyed how things panned out for me, too. I'm just pulling up my team right now. But I know some of my last picks, Byron Buxton, Yaziel Puig. Let's see here. I'm just pulling it up. I sound like Mike Francesa when he was trying to pull up. Did you guys hear that bit where
that was
he
bad,
spent like 20 minutes talking about these two teams that played each other.
Maryland.
Yeah. And they're not, they're not even in the same conference anymore.
Right.
He's like, hold on a second. Hold on a second. So, okay. So one of my strategies was in a two-catcher league, no bench spots to it. I think it was a 10-teamer. Yeah. I got Buster Posey and Gary Sanchez. So I wasn't feeling too bad about that. Some of my later guys, Brandon Drury, who can kind of play all over.
Love that guy.
Lorenzo Cain, Max Kepler, who I know you also like. Jock Peterson, Yaziel Puig. And then I went, I was really late on pitching. And actually, with Urias not cracking the opening day roster, that's going to be difficult. I'm going to have to navigate that somehow. But also, four closers with, I think it was 6 point saves. I got Britton, Jansen, Edwin Diaz, and Wade Davis. So it was one of those deals where I focused on certain things very specifically, and I think it's going to be a boom or bust strategy. But I think it's going to be a fun league.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the format, too, because, like, obviously if Number 4 is owned by FanDuel, I work a lot with FanDuel scoring, and that's the scoring for the league, outside of the saves, like you mentioned. So that gets me really geeked. Anytime you can get Edwin Diaz, I think you're sitting okay.
Yeah.
He is probably my favorite player right now relative to where they're going. I guess NFBC, it's a little bit different because there are some pretty sharp people there. Mm-hmm. But as far as like Yahoo goes, actually, yeah, he's 79 on NFBC. But like on Yahoo, I think he's around 100 and ESPN, he's 105.
Wow.
Like to me, that's just like insane to get him at that spot. So I love your team having Edwin Diaz. I think that's a really good selection. And I love points leagues in general. I know they're not as traditional as a roto league, but given what I'm researching, mostly focusing on daily fantasy, I will always take a points league if I can get it.
What part of the closer run do you like to be part of, the beginning or the end or the middle?
Middle. I think that Edwin Diaz tier is my favorite tier. I was breaking it down into tiers when I'm doing a snake draft or auction, too, just because I want to know where the end of that tier is. And like that tier of Edwin Diaz, Roberto Osuna, Wade Davis, Ken Giles, there's so much good. And I'd put Cody Allen in that tier, too, just because I think people are a little bit lower on him than they should be. I think that there are a lot of interesting names in there. So I'm not like... like, I'll take Kenley Jansen where he's going. I'm not opposed to it because he's stupidly good and he'll bring down your ERA and your whip and get you saves at the same time on a really good team. But I'm also not going to reach for those guys. Like, but I'm kind of planning my drafts around taking a reliever or two in that tier that includes, I guess, Sungwon Oh, too, is in that same tier of Diaz, Ozuna, and guys like that. Like, if I'm drafting in that tier, I know I'm going to find someone who I like. It doesn't really matter what the name is. I prefer Diaz just because I love him, you know, his skills, his baseball skills. But I'm not going to complain if I wind up like with Oh or Ozuna or someone like that.
Now, you know, I'm obviously prodding you for our draft tonight, the Number 4 ESPN League.
Right.
So, I mean, this is why I have you on today.
Yeah, just absolutely plan on me taking a reliever sometime around 100.
Sure. Well, I will have it marked down here in my
yes.
So let's go position by position. We're going to break down some NFBC average draft positions, and we're just going to kind of riff on who we like, who we don't. We'll go through all the positions, and that'll be that. How does that sound?
Sounds great to me. Let's do it.
All right, so let's start at catcher. In that Yahoo draft that we did, Buster Posey and Gary Sanchez are the top two catchers, which serendipitous is that I got them both. But this is what their top five looks like right now. You got Posey, Sanchez, Jonathan Lucroy, Wilson Contreras, Evan Gattis, and even if you go to six, you got JT Realmuto. Do you have a must-have or a stay away from in that tier?
I kind of stay away from most of those guys. I think that just because the prices are pretty high, in NFBC at least, I think the prices are too high for me to take a catcher just because of the volume. I think that the exception for me would be Jonathan Lucroy. NFBC, he's a little bit rich for my blood. If we're looking at like Yahoo and ESPN, his price is a lot lower, like significantly lower. And to me, that says the smart people in NFBC are willing to take this guy here, but he's going here on these sites. Maybe that means I should take Jonathan Lucroy. And the thing that I love about Lucroy is, A, he can play – he can play when he's not catching. He can go to first base. Mm-hmm. He can DH for the Rangers if they don't have Shinsu Chu there that day.
Right.
And that, to me, is a huge plus. And also, if you look at Lucroy's batted ball stats last year, around June, I think it was, June or May, he started hitting just a ton of fly balls. And that plays better in Milwaukee than it does in Texas.
Yeah.
That's still a really good park for a hitter. Mm-hmm. So I think that Lucroy is kind of my guy in that range. But outside of that, for the most part, I'm kind of holding off until we get to that, you know, third tier or so of catchers.
So you got Posey that plays a little bit all over, and Lucroy as well. You can get Lucroy 13 picks further behind, which is obviously a round, or if you're in the middle of a round, it could be a couple picks. So that is helpful. Okay, so if you're missing out on those top five guys, who are you looking at further down the list? Because, see, for me, the guy that I wrote for Fangraphs that I like more than most is Yasmani Grandal, who had a really good second half, like a 350 on base. He's never going to carry your batting average. But at his best, he won't kill you because he can probably hit he probably hit 245, 250. On base is going to carry. He's got good power. I got him in score sheet, which is awesome because he's also got pretty good defensive ratings, I believe. But I just like Grandal a lot. You go further down the list. I'm intrigued by Devin Mesoraco, who might not be ready to start the season, but I did see him doing some pretty intense plyometric drills, jumping up and down and all that. And I think that he's going way 22nd in front of Derek Norris, who just got released. Jan Gomes, who is my backup in score sheet, which I'm also actually pretty excited about. But behind guys like Austin Hedges, Mike Zunino, Sandy Leon. So there's a potential for a real deep pull down there. Who do you like in the other tiers?
Yeah, I think you nailed it with Grandal. I think that he's a really good selection. The thing about looking at his stats last year is that he was bad the first couple of months.
Like extremely really bad.
He was atrocious. Then he had that streak right before the All-Star break where he just hit dinger after dinger after dinger, and it kind of carried over throughout the second half too. So, like, even looking at his full season stats is kind of misleading, I think, because that surge coincided with an increase in his hard hit rate, his batted ball stats as a whole kind of increased. So I think it was legitimate. That's why I like him a lot where he's going. He's probably the catcher I'm most willing to take at their ADP and NFBC, just because I think that he's a really solid pick. He's 144.11 there. He's actually even lower on ESPN and Yahoo, too.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Grandal is a really good selection. I like him there. I don't mind Russell Martin.
He's all right.
He was another guy who was atrocious at the beginning of last year, but he seemed like he's been playing pretty well so far this spring, just based on, like, avoiding strikeouts, stuff like that. He hasn't been too bad. I think Martin's a good choice. And I don't know, man. I'm trying to talk myself out of Wellington Castillo because of the defense and kind of worry that Caleb Joseph may steal some plate appearances, which is a thing that I'm considering. But if you look at Castillo's hard hit rate last year with Arizona, it was so good when he was, like, a personal issue that happened at some point during last year that may have dragged him down a bit. But outside of that, he was a really good catcher. And now I know that, you can't really improve much from Chase Field, but putting me in Camden is awesome. So I like Castillo too. I think that tier of three, the Grandal, Martin, and Castillo tier is my favorite. I like drafting guys in that range. If we're looking at lower guys, I wish that the Braves hadn't signed Kurt Suzuki. Because, like, I love Tyler Flowers, but I'm kind of worried that the Braves may fall into this lull, this Kurt Suzuki lull, and use him a bit more for Tyler Flowers. Like, Tyler Flowers can yoke a baseball, man. Mm-hmm. And, like, if he were their full-time guaranteed starter in their new park, which I think is going to be a lot better, it sounds, at least, initial reports are going to be better than shakes out right, then Flowers will be a guy on my rosters. Mm-hmm. But I just kind of want to see how the playing time shakes out first.
So who are you staying away from as catchers? We'll wrap up with that. Because, see, for me, I mean, you do have to think about sophomore slumps, even if they're not a real, predictive.
Right.
Gary Sanchez, Wilson Contreras, excuse me. But I'm also staying away from Matt Wieters, who offensively had the same weighted runs created plus as Jason Castro last year. Jason Castro completely off the radar in pretty much every league, and 29th overall, going up pick 370. So, I mean, he's not going in any leagues.
Right.
He's never really done the offensive thing like he was supposed to. So those are kind of the guys that I'm shying away from. I know I did take Sanchez in our two catcher league, but I think as a hedge, Posey's a pretty good hedge for that. But who are you staying away from?
Evan Gattis, 100%. I'm worried about playing time in Houston. I think that, if they hadn't brought in Beltran and McCann, I would have been very much into Gattis this year because I've always loved getting that much pop from a catcher and also the fact that he could DH if those guys weren't there. But now that you add Carlos Beltran, who was a really good hitter last year still, even though he's like, I think he's going to be 40 this year. Mm-hmm. He was a really good hitter last year at the Yankees. They added Josh Reddick, which kind of clouds things up. Noriichi Aoki. A.J. Reed is having a fantastic spring. I know that he's probably going to wind up in AAA to start the year, but there are just a lot of bats fighting for DH for the Astros. I would assume that McCann will be doing the majority of the catching. That kind of makes me question what kind of playing time Gattis is going to see. So I'm not in on him. I'm fully out on JT Realmuto, too. It's not anything I'd knock on him as a player. I think he's a fine player. I just don't like his ADP. It's atrocious. Based on where he's going right now, I don't see him batting leadoff anymore now that D. Gordon is there. That was kind of the big thing that was in Realmuto's favor outside of a couple of stolen bases. I just don't see what the advantage is of him over a healthy, you know, if healthy, Salvador Perez, who's going well below him, even Yasmani Grandal relative to Realmuto. So I think that Gattis and Realmuto are the guys I am absolutely fervently avoiding. And the thing is, too, like, they're kind of in that tier of guys that I'm just kind of avoiding as a whole, too.
All right, so moving to first base, our top five are goalie, Rizzo, Cabrera, Votto, and Encarnacion. On the outside looking in, somehow, is Freddie Freeman. So this is obviously a stacked position this year. All those guys going in the top 26 picks on average. Who are you rushing towards in this group?
Everyone?
Literally almost everyone.
Yeah, I mean, I love all these guys. And the thing is, it's kind of like goes back to the tiering discussion with relief pitchers. I want to, if it's a snake draft, I want to have one of those six guys in my first two rounds. I don't care if it's Freddie Freeman. I don't care if it's Edwin Encarnacion. I want to have one of those guys on my roster by the time we exit the second round, just because the fall off from there is so grotesque. And I hate drafting in like a dead zone. And there's like the fall off from Freddie Freeman to Will Myers is 29 picks. It's another 7 picks down to Jose Abreu. And then it's another 20 picks down to Hanley Ramirez. I can't justify picking a first baseman in that kind of gap there. So I'm basically, if I don't get one of those guys, I'm waiting. I'm fine with Hanley Ramirez. I'm really actually fine with Hanley Ramirez where he's going.
Mm-hmm.
But then outside of that, I'm just going late round first base and kind of holding off. But I love all six of those top guys. I will happily take any of them who fall to me.
What about Jose Abreu? I mean, it doesn't seem like he should be that far off the radar. Do you like him this year?
I don't know. I think that his ADP has gone down enough where I like him again. I was a bit off on him last year just because, I don't know, it's like, it's so hard with Jose Abreu. I think he's my biggest question mark in this draft, even though Will Myers is kind of in that same realm as far as a question mark, as far as where do I value them. I just think that he doesn't provide enough value for me relative to Hanley Ramirez for me to justify taking him 20 picks sooner. Like, Jose Abreu, as a player, as a fantasy asset, I'm okay with in a vacuum, but when I see that Hanley Ramirez is 20 picks cheaper, I tend to steer more towards Hanley and away from Abreu. So it's not necessarily that I dislike Abreu, I just dislike where he's going relative to other guys at that position. What about you?
Well, so if I am picking there and I miss out on one of those guys, I will wait on Jose and get him late. If I have to wait really late and I have in a couple drafts, I think Adrian Gonzalez at pick 174 is pretty sturdy value. Brandon Belt at 171 also I don't hate. Carlos Santana, you know, it depends on the format, because OBP is going to get a big boost.
Right.
For me, though, here's what I think is fool's gold. Eric Hosmer at 106, I just am not buying whatsoever. I think he and Brandon Belt are interchangeable. And I know that Belt maybe doesn't have quite the power in like a 5x5 or anything like that. But I feel like in
Hosmer.
What's that?
Neither does Hosmer.
That's true. I just feel like in real life baseball, Brandon Belt is the player that we've always thought Eric Hosmer is. Like, it's the same reason why Jim Leland's playing him over Paul Goldschmidt in the World Baseball Classic, and nobody really understands why. It's like, Hosmer, to me, just does not match the hype whatsoever.
I agree. I think that if he until his fly ball rate goes up, mm-hmm. there's no chance we'll ever have Eric Hosmer on a team. Like, he was his ADP was a lot lower last year, and I didn't want to touch him there, and he's pretty much the same thing now outside of a couple of raw home runs. So I'm not in on Hosmer at all. I'm actually waiting a little bit longer at first base. I think that if I miss out on those top guys, I wind up on Tommy Joseph a lot.
Mm-hmm.
He's 214.6 right now in NFBC. If you look at last year, when he was kind of, you know, switching off with Ryan Howard, obviously, with the Phillies, his strikeout rate got much lower in the second half. His walk rate got much higher, and he maintained pretty much the exact same batted ball stats, which is a heavy fly ball hitter in one of the best parks for home runs in the entire league.
Mm-hmm.
And now you give him every day at bats. He's a right-handed batter, so there's no real platoon splits there. he, to me, is a really obvious late-round guy at first base I can go to. Doesn't have the same platoon concerns as Greg Bird, who I also love. I think that he's also worth his price right now, 243.58 on NFBC. I think that that's a great price for him, too. Those two guys are kind of the ones that I'm turning to, essentially, when I'm looking for either a depth hitter or a utility guy. Maybe I'm still waiting on corner infield for some reason at that point. Mm-hmm. They are really the top of my list. Joseph and Greg Bird are definitely two guys I adore for their current prices.
Does real life value ever bother you, like creep into your mind at all? I mean, because here's the deal. I know in a vacuum, Hosmer hit 25 home runs last year and hit 266, but I also look at the fact that he was a minus WAR player via Fangraphs. And again, there's this rift between, it's kind of like with Adam Jones, the perceived value of their defense versus what the numbers say. And I know that that's a pretty big gorge to kind of traverse. But how much does real life value bug, like kind of bug you, you know, buzz in your ear like that annoying mosquito when you're trying to sleep?
I think it does more for fringy type guys than it does Eric Hosmer, because there's no way they're taking Hosmer out of the lineup. But if there's a guy like, again, I mentioned Yasmani Tomas before, who I love from a like a fantasy perspective, I am worried about playing time because he's atrocious defensively. Like, I saw a tweet that made me laugh. I still stump for Oswaldo Arcia. They were like, whenever you watch Oswaldo Arcia in the outfield for the Diamondbacks, you appreciate Yasmani Tomas more. And I was like, that's probably not saying a whole lot in Yasmani Tomas' favor. But either way, right, it's kind of indicative. Like, that's where he is defensively. And that does worry me. Like, they have Chris Owings playing sometimes in the outfield in spring training. They've got Ketel Marte there. They could move Owings out to the outfield. David Peralta, A.J. Pollock are both healthy. Mm-hmm. So for a guy like Yasmani Tomas, who's a bit more fringy and is kind of outlierishly bad defensively, it does worry me. You know, real-world baseball does worry me more there than it does for a guy like Hosmer, where the Royals probably don't care, I guess. Like, I don't know what better options they may have than Hosmer. So it worries me more for those fringe-type guys like Tomas than it does for Hosmer.
So if you completely fall asleep at the wheel and you are going to take a first baseman super-duper late, like super late, you know, are you in on someone like Justin Bour, or who's your guy really late?
Yeah, Justin Bour is a good name. I think that's a totally fine name. They've actually had him hitting ahead of Marcell Ozuna in spring. And I loved Ozuna before. That kind of worries me about him, but it's also an endorsement of Bour. His batted ball stats last year were good. He's a lefty, so he'll probably yoke against righties. The problem is the park, even with the changes they made to the outfield wall last year, still isn't that great for fantasy. So
yeah, it's kind of Petco East.
Yeah,
old
exactly.
Petco East.
Totally agree. Yep, totally agree on that one. I think that it's not going to scare me away from Giancarlo Stanton, but a fringy guy like Bour, maybe a little. But I think that he's good enough to make up for that. And also, if I could guarantee that Lucas Duda would be healthy this year,
yeah,
which is far from a guarantee, it's definitely not a guarantee, I'd love that dude. I mean, he just hits for power all the time. The problem is, it doesn't seem as if the health is a guarantee there. So I think if you're picking that late and you need a guy, I think that Duda is a good choice, and I would go with him. Brandon Moss is kind of there too.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that Duda is the health concerns scare me away. But overall, for that price, those health concerns are already baked in.
Do you feel like between Duda and David Wright, the Mets have one complete player there?
Not even that?
Yeah,
less than that, unfortunately. The good thing is, like, if they would stick Jay Bruce at first base, you know, if Duda gets hurt, that allows Michael Conforto to play. That means they get one of their best bats finally in the lineup. I'm not mad about the Mets not having Conforto in the lineup every day, but I'm pretty mad about it, if you can't tell.
Yeah.
So, like, anything to get Michael Conforto in the lineup, I think it could be okay. But it's so tough to see Duda be unhealthy right now.
Whose career winding down bums you out more, David Wright or Joe Mauer?
Joe Mauer, obviously. For obvious reasons.
Okay, if you could be an unbiased observer, would it still be Joe Mauer?
That's a good one. Maybe. I don't know. Like, I think if we're talking about post-catcher Joe Mauer, like, if we look at that, like, when Joe Mauer was still a catcher and he was, like, amazing, that would have bummed me out then if you had said, this guy will eventually move to first base, he'll eventually lose the power he showed in his MVP year, stuff like that. I'd be really bummed. But I think that David Wright kind of had more sustained like power like that. So I think probably as a whole it would be David Wright, I guess. But, I mean, those concussions, they just, man, that's so tough with Mauer.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to second base. The top five there, Jose Altuve, Trey Turner, Robinson Cano, Brian Dozier, and Daniel Murphy. Rugi Odor on the outside looking in, D. Gordon as well. You know, what's your breakdown of that top five?
Yeah, I'm probably not going for D. Gordon. I think that I don't really pay for guys who are pretty much speed only. Like, he kind of a decent batting average, but I think his soft hit rate last year was like 27%, which is woof.
I think he was really one of only two players with X number of plate appearances that didn't hit a barreled up ball. I think is that
really?
A Statcast thing? And like, based on launch angles and exit velocity, and the home run he hit, like the Jose Fernandez like tribute home run, even that wasn't considered barreled. So I think it was like 400 plate appearances or 300, and it was him and one other player who didn't have one barreled up ball, which is, that's pretty brutal.
I would guess Alcides Escobar. Assume it's probably. But I think I'm not really in on D. Gordon. Outside of the rest of the second baseman, though, I think they're all kind of appropriately priced. I don't usually buy Brian Dozier where he's at because I do value situation a lot, and I'm a bit worried about the strikeouts to the Twins and being able to buoy him if he ever has a cold streak. Like, I want, if a guy's in a cold streak, I want him to at least be getting runs scored and RBIs in a fantasy sense. I'm not really sure the Twins have a lineup that can allow him to do that when he's not really, you know, hitting it. So I don't really go for Dozier, but I love Daniel Murphy where he's going. I think that lineup is the exact opposite, where I think Murphy will be getting you at least some production no matter what he does individually. So I like Murphy a lot. I like Cano because he's a G. Love Cano. I think Turner's fine where he's going, and I don't mind Altuve. So this is kind of like the first base tier where maybe I'm not in on Dozier, but for the most part, this is a really good position at the top.
What are the odds, though, that Turner just absolutely blows up on people? Because, you know, this is a guy with a 4% or 5% walk rate and very limited sustained big league success.
Yeah, I think that's a possibility. I think that may be possible. It's not being fully factored in to his draft position right now. But if you look at, stat testing behind Trey Turner, Andrew Pepperdula, I think this is my fan graphs. You probably know his name better than I would, but he does the X stats stuff. Looking at exit velocity, launch angle, and all those things to generate kind of an expected triple slash line for a guy. And Turner's numbers last year were really good. Kind of helps out Ian Turner. The stolen bases helps out Ian Turner. The bat. Even if he maybe doesn't perform as well as he should, I think the floor is actually pretty high on him, which allows me to draft him. But yeah, I agree. There's potentially a bigger possibility that it blows up than people are accounting for right now.
Do you like Ian Kinsler 40 picks behind Dozier?
I think I like him relative to Dozier, if that makes sense. I think that he doesn't really provide a lot of upside, so I'm not really finding myself with Ian Kinsler a lot.
Yeah.
And he's kind of potentially, I don't know, he's weird last year at times. So Kinsler's not really a guy who's super huge on my radar, so I'm kind of not really in on him. But I think he's respectable where he's going, if that makes sense.
Are you out on Jason Kipnis with the issues he's having injury-wise?
100% at that cost, especially just because, like, if it were a traditional year, like in the past when second base were a black hole for offense, then I would maybe still, you know, take the L for the first month or whatever, first week, couple weeks, and just deal with it. But I think when you've got guys like Ben Zobrist, Devin Travis, Logan Forsythe, going as late as they are, I'm not really going to take a guy I know maybe dealing with ineffectiveness even when he gets back. So, yeah, I'm pretty much out on Kipnis.
Jose Peraza is going 7 picks behind Kipnis. Interesting guy. I wrote him up for Fantasy Pros as a stolen base sleeper. What do you think of him? Obviously, clear path to playing time at second base with Brandon Phillips out of the picture.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's kind of what makes me pretty okay with him. I had mentioned before I don't like D. Gordon because he's a speed-only guy, and I think that Peraza's kind of in that same realm, but at the same time, his price is so much cheaper than it is for D. Gordon.
Yeah,
for
70, 60, some 65 picks later.
Absolutely. And it's even cheaper on places like ESPN and Yahoo. So if you're not doing it in a BC draft, you can get him pretty late. And, like, you know, his batted ball stats are never going to blow anybody away, but the good thing is he never strikes out. It was a 12.9%. His strikeout rate last year, it's been low throughout his entire minor league career. He's going to get on base, which is great because he can get those steals, even if he doesn't get walks. I think that he'll at least have a high batting average. So he's going to contribute more in more than one category, which is kind of my criterion for a guy like that. I need a guy who won't just give me speed. I want some runs scored, a decent batting average, and I think that Peraza has enough to justify that, especially with his ADP being much lower on other sites.
So let's take a deep dive. Who are you taking below the first maybe 200 or so picks? Who are you diving in on?
I think that Jed Jerko is still going a bit too low. I think that he has shortstop eligibility a lot of places.
Well, and where's he going to play? Because is he going to steal time at second from Wong? Is he going to play third? Is Peralta going to play third?
I was reading third. Okay. It sounded earlier this spring as if he was going to start at third base. Diaz would be at shortstop, Wong at second base. I wish they would put Jerko at second base. I've never really, I guess, been a huge Colton Wong guy. I don't know why. I just never really been into him that much. So I wish that they'd put Jerko at second, for fantasy reasons, put Jerko at second, Peralta at third, or Matt Carpenter at third, Matt Adams at first base. That'd be even better with the batted ball numbers Matt Adams had last year.
Right.
But regardless, I think that he seems safe enough where I'm willing to use him where he's going in ADP. So Jerko's good. I think I like Neil Walker, too, going back to the Mets. They have a lot of guys who are kind of interesting for their ADP. Walker was hurt heading into last year, or during last year, too, but his batted ball numbers were good again. So, and he started to hit lefties for whatever reason. Out of nowhere, Neil Walker can suddenly hit left-handed pitching. So I think that Neil Walker's a good guy, too, based on where he's going.
That Cardinals infield is pretty talented with the guys that won't be playing every single day. Now that we think about it, Matt Adams and Johnny Peralta sitting every day, that's quite a bit of talent that's on the bench.
I like that team a lot. They're going to score a lot of runs, especially with Dex at the top, and then finally releasing Matt Carper at a run-producing spot in the order for fantasy purposes.
Yep.
He's going to be really fun this
year. I had Piscotty as a sleeper RBI guy just because behind Fowler and Carpenter getting on base, if you hit Carpenter second or third, Diaz second, 369 on base last year, you're going to have three or four guys in front of him that are going to be on base all the time.
And then Grichuk can drive him home to get the run scored, too, if he can make contact.
Yep.
We'll see about that.
The second baseman that I like deep dives, Joe Panik, obviously coming off a very rough season last year, but he had concussion issues, BABIP issues. Obviously not a high ceiling, but he could give you batting average, could give you a couple home runs and steals. You know, if you completely fall apart at second base, he's a nice fallback. What do you think about Ryan Schimpf? He's so weird. Hit 217 last year, but 20 bombs. If you isolated the on-base and slugging, you'd be head over heels, hard eyes over him. 336 on base, 533 slugging. Between him and Rosales, they had two of the quietest, ridiculous offensive seasons last year for the Padres, and it's like nobody even noticed. Would you take him in a real deep league, OBP league, NL only? You know, what are your thresholds for looking at a guy like Ryan Schimpf?
I'm trying to remember. I may have taken him in the Yahoo League. I don't remember for sure. I may have gotten him there. I actually love Ryan Schimpf, so I'm glad you asked about him.
Yeah.
There was a point last year, I think it was the month of August, where like the top fly ball rate guy was around like 59%. I don't remember who it was. It was someone who was hitting a lot of fly balls for that month. And the guy, the only guy above him was Ryan Schimpf at like 75%.
Wow.
Which, 75% fly ball rate. Which, yeah, a couple of those were infield pop-ups, but like whatever, that's kind of his approach. So I think that Schimpf is awesome. I love him. And I think that if you're punting average, he's not a bad guy to use in other leagues, too. I'm a bit worried about where he'll hit in the batting order because I don't think he'll be super high there. So I wouldn't go head over heels for Ryan Schimpf, and he's not a guy I'm using in like a 10 or a 12-team league. But if it gets a little bit deeper, then, and you need some dingers, you know, why not Ryan Schimpf?
Yeah, no kidding. So let's move to third base. There's a very clear separation here between the first four and everyone else. Bryant, Arenado, Machado, and Donaldson going top 12. And then the next guy is Kyle Seager going almost 70th. So that's a pretty big gorge there. Of those top four, you know, where do you stand on each of those guys?
Yeah, I love Nolan Arenado. I think that he's obviously tremendous. He has this weird combo that you don't see very often of a low strikeout rate and immense power. And
Bob Nightingale said that the World Baseball Classic could be his coming out party, and it's like, dude, this guy's going fifth overall in fantasy drafts. Like, literally anybody with a brain and a pulse
second
knows.
Second in MVP voting last year?
Yeah, like this is not a coming out party for this guy.
He's going to win the MVP this year, too. You can write that down. But Arenado's really good where he's going. I think that I probably have him behind, like, maybe just Mike Trout. It's hard for me to figure out between Nolan Arenado, Mookie Betts, and Bryce Harper overall. I think that they're kind of all three right together.
Is Altuve close?
Yeah, I think he is. I think that he's, like, five in that discussion. But I think that I think that he's definitely close, just because, I mean, especially the power increase last year, he's really interesting. But I think that Arenado's right up there. So I have no objections where he's going. I think Bryant's at a fine price just because he reduced his strikeout rate last year.
That's who I got in our Yahoo League.
Yeah, exactly. And I think he's a tremendous selection. I love Chris Bryant. That offense will be good again, too, especially with the re-addition of Schwarber to help fill the void of Dexter Fowler. Mm-hmm. So I love Chris Bryant. The one who gives me a little bit of pause is Machado, which is hard given how he's played in the WBC because he's looked awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And the shortstop eligibility does help. But I'm just worried about – I think that if you look at him and you compare him to Arenado, neither guy's going to give you a lot of steals anymore because Machado literally stopped stealing bases last year. He had none all of last year. That, and you compare him to Arenado, I think there's a pretty big gap between those two because Arenado plays at Coors. He has a lower strikeout rate. He has more power. So I just don't really see how Machado can be that close to Arenado. And part of that's the nature of a snake draft. Like, they're going to have a closer gap between the top tier and the rest. But I'm not really taking Machado where he's going right now. I think of those four, he's the one I'm least inclined to have on my team.
So in the next, if you miss out on that top tier, and I like all four, Mike, I can't really say a bad word about any of them. The Donaldson thing where he hasn't played much this spring is
right.
Not bothering me a whole lot yet. The next seven guys all go in the top 100 picks. Who do you like in the next seven with Seager, Carpenter, Frazier, who I'm out on, Beltre, Rendon, Bregman, and then Jose Ramirez of the Indians?
So I'm not on Frazier too, fully, very much so. Seager,
plus if he gets traded, you don't know what the park's right. going to be like or anything.
Absolutely. He's basically Chris Carter with stolen bases at
yep.
this point.
Yep.
But, like, I love Carpenter where he's going. I mentioned that before. He has kind of that, again, that Nolan Arenado thing where he's a below-average strikeout rate, a high fly ball rate, and a high hard hit rate, which you don't find very often.
Mm-hmm.
And now he'll be getting runs batted in, too, based on his spot in the order. So I love Carpenter. I love Rendon. He's a little bit more expensive in NFBC than he is in ESPN. But I think that you're putting him in a lineup with Bryce Harper, Adam Eaton, maybe not Adam Eaton ahead of him based on what Dusty Baker does.
So weird.
But Trey Turner, yeah, I don't understand that. And Daniel Murphy, that lineup is going to score a ton of runs.
Mm-hmm.
Rendon is going to be in a run-driving spot in that order. So I love Rendon. He'll get you some steals, too, because Dusty loves to run. And then Bregman, too. I think that Bregman's fine. I think that the one knock I have on Bregman that kind of may lead me away from him is I have a hard time justifying a 14 pick gap between him and Evan Longoria.
I was about to ask you about that. Yeah.
Yeah. They're kind of the same in a lot of ways. Bregman will probably have more steals just because he's Alex Bregman. He's very good,
mm-hmm.
but that's the only thing that really draws me away from Bregman. It's not that it's the same thing as like I mentioned with Jose Abreu. It's not that I dislike him. It's that I dislike where he's going relative to player Y, and that player Y in this instance is Evan Longoria.
Yeah, Evan Longoria is the first guy on the outside looking in. You got Michael Franco, Javier Baez, Justin Turner. I feel like Turner at 128, I think you could almost justify him over Todd Frazier at 77. Am I crazy?
I do. He actually is higher in my ranks than Todd Frazier. If I'm looking at my tiers, I think Frazier's actually a tier below Justin Turner. He's in the same one like with Jake Lamb and those guys.
Yeah.
I'm not in at all. And I think the Turner, I know that he's not like this big-time name because he was never a big prospect coming up, and he kind of broke out late.
Well, he got non-tendered by the Mets, for crying out loud.
Right. Exactly. But at the same time, we've seen him have really good peripheral numbers for two or three straight years now. And he just keeps legitimizing it. And he was awesome last year. He's playing in a really good lineup that now has a run-producing guy at the top in Logan Forsyth. I have no reason to stay away from Justin Turner, especially, again, like you said, relative to Todd Frazier. He's a really good pick.
I like Jake Lamb quite a bit. In fact, when I was doing hypothetical Twins trades with the Diamondbacks for Dozier, I had hoped the Twins could last you him in, obviously. Ooh. Very, very high in the pie in the sky kind of dreams, but a really nice player. And then I think Nick Castellanos is going way too low at 204. I like Moustakas a little bit too at 208. I mean, obviously both guys missed time due to injuries. I can't think of a more catastrophic play in baseball last year than the collision between Moustakas and Gordon.
Yeah.
With both guys going down, yeah. Obviously Moustakas missing the entire season. But in fact, I named my team tonight Who Wants a Moustakas Ride. So Super
like
Troopers
that.
Reference there. But I really like Castellanos late. In fact, in our Yahoo League, he was one of my picks towards the back as my corner infielder. And I think he is going to turn some heads this year.
So I forgot that we're picking the same draft tonight. So I would never draft Nick Castellanos ever. I don't love him more than anyone else in this draft. No, I mean,
yikes.
Castellanos, he's always had the good batted ball numbers. Like, he's been this weird like anomaly where he had great batted ball numbers but couldn't make enough contact and have it make an impact. But last year he started to do it a little bit more. The batted ball numbers came through, and now they're probably going to hit him second
mm-hmm.
in that lineup. You know, ahead of Nicky Cabrera, ahead of fingers crossed, a healthy JD Martinez. Just kind of sweating things out there until Friday to get the MRI results on his foot. But Nick Castellanos, apparently he trimmed down a bit this year and is now faster, which may add stolen bases to the equation.
Mm-hmm.
And if you give him stolen bases on top of the tools he already possesses, he'll be phenomenal. He's another guy I mentioned, you know, that tier of relievers. I am kind of planning ahead as if I'm going to take Nick Castellanos every time, whether it be, you know, maybe holding off on a corner infield spot just because I know he'll be waiting around later. I think that Castellanos is good enough based on the increased spot in the order, based on the possibility of getting some stolen bases too. I think there's enough there where I could justify holding off.
What are you doing for a local angle here? Are you doing anything with Jorge Polanco this year in fantasy?
I think that he's fine in deeper leagues. I mean, just because he has shortstop eligibility, he's shown actually a decent amount of pop this spring, which has been surprising to me. And, you know, looking at spring numbers can be misleading, but if you're looking at strikeout rate, walk rate, and isolated power, you can actually gain a little bit of info from that. And Polanco's looking really good. I think that the one reason I'm lower on him now than I was before is because I was kind of hoping he might land, you know, the number two spot in that order. And it seems like the Twins are going to go with either Mauer, Dozier, or Buxton there, which from a real baseball perspective, I adore. Like, I'm happy those guys are going to be up there. I mean, Buxton's OEP is kind of concerning. But I think that if Polanco were hitting second, I'd be way more into him than I am right now. But based on the assumption he'll probably be hovering around like seventh or so, I'm kind of less in on him right now than I was.
So that's a natural segue to shortstop. Top six guys are all going in the top 31 picks. Correa, Seager, VR, Bogarts, Lindor, and Story. How do you analyze that?
Yeah, I think I'm really out on Bogarts and Lindor. They don't really excel. I don't know if that's like too hard.
Yeah, they're just steady. They're just steady. You know, they're not gonna, but they're not gonna blow up for you. And in the first 30 picks, you're looking for like high end production, not safe.
And like you can get that from pretty much everyone else in this tier. Like Correa is in a really good lineup. He's got some pop. Seager has pop in a really good lineup. Jonathan VR will get you a ton of steals. Also, he's in a great park and kind of a sneaky okay lineup. I think that's probably the way I classify Milwaukee right now. But the steals are kind of what set him apart. And then for Story, just insane power. And I don't really see an outlierish statistic in Bogarts or Lindor. So it's weird that they're both young guys, both play the same position, and they're both kind of going the same place in ADP. They're actually within a pick of each other.
Yeah.
But I think that they are the two guys in this year's draft that I am most heavily deviated from consensus on, where I probably will end the spring doing a lot of drafts and not having a single share of either of those guys just because they don't really excel in any one category.
So this is kind of strange. Eduardo Nunez, 115 overall, obviously a decent player, but does it surprise you that he's the number seven shortstop?
Yeah, he's weird. So he's all over the map. He's a 115 on NFBC. He's around 146 on ESPN, and he's 196 on Yahoo. So, like, people cannot come to a consensus on Nunez. And, like, I get it from Yahoo's perspective. Like, he's Eduardo Nunez still. He's playing in the worst park for offense in baseball. Maybe there are some playing time concerns with Guan, I think his last name is. And then also Casey Gillespie had some interesting, or is it Connor Gillespie? They have too many Gillespies. Either way, the Gillespie kid over at third base for the Giants. There are a lot of people there who could take his spot if he were to stumble, especially given that Eduardo Nunez's bat isn't really fit for, you know, the hot corner. So Nunez, I think he's way too high in NFBC. Again, this is a lot of smart people, so they probably know better than me. But I can't justify taking him there, but I also can't justify his ADP being as low as it is on Yahoo. So he's kind of just a really weird dude where you need to know where his ADP is on the site you're drafting on before you go in.
At 163 overall, is Mr. Too Low going too low?
Yes, absolutely.
I think like so, too. And I mean, he has not been good in Toronto, but
no.
This feels like it's got his awfulness in Toronto and his injury potential baked in and then some. I'm not taking him behind Tim Anderson. I'm not taking him behind Elvis Andrews. Maybe Yadmeles Diaz, maybe Addison Russell, but I'm not taking him 16 picks ahead of Dansby Swanson. Like, that's too
low. Absolutely. And the thing is, too, Tulo is probably going to be hitting at a really good spot in the order.
Well, especially with Encarnacion out of the picture.
Absolutely. I think that's fully justifiable. And the thing is, too, like, I don't think people are really accounting for the role the injuries have played on Tulo the last couple of years. And, like, he's had a full offseason to heal. He's, you know, he's hitting high in the order. He was leadoff yesterday. I know that'll probably change when Devin Travis is back with him. But I just think that there's too much to like there. Based on his batted ball profile from last year, which was pretty good again, it wasn't as good as it was when he was with Colorado, but still good. Shortstop eligibility, good hitter, great offense in a park that's not going to, you know, be weighed down by the winter like, you know, a lot of places will. I think Tulo's going way too low.
And we've got Marcus Semien going 208th, maybe the quietest 27 home run, 70 RBI season in history.
And 10 steals.
Yeah. He's not going to blow up your average. He has zero on-base percentages over 300 in his career, which obviously he hasn't played for that long. But are you in on Semien? Because honestly, I think in a deep league, especially if you don't have to worry too much about OBP, I mean, he's going to hurt your OBP. He might hurt your average. But that kind of power from a shortstop at that spot is kind of a luxury.
Yeah, fully. I think the thing about Semien is that he's going to contribute again. This is what I look for in multiple categories. He's going to get you dingers. He can give you a couple stolen bases. I think he had 10 last year and 12 the year before that. He'll probably drive in, you know, a good number of runs. I believe Roster Resource has him slotted to bat sixth this year for Oakland.
Yeah, I wasn't sure because they lost the player that batted leadoff most last year, second, fifth, and sixth, I think it was.
Yeah.
And fifth and sixth, they were both Josh Reddick, if I remember correctly.
Right.
So that order is in flux. The biggest thing for me is I want him to hit behind Matt Joyce, who somehow had a 400 on base percentage last year, and nobody has any idea of that.
Right, exactly. And the thing is, too, like, it's not as if a lot of the departures for Oakland were like departures that are going to sink their offense. I mean, like, they were, you know, they were dudes, but it's not like they lost Yuan Cespedes the year when they traded him at the trade deadline, anything like that. They should still be a decent team. I know Vegas hates the Athletics this year, but I still think they're going to score enough runs to justify fantasy investment. I think that Semien's a big part of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I have no objections to him. The weird thing, too, is it seems like he's been around forever, but he's still entering his age 26 season. And to me, like, I feel like he's been around forever, but he's still kind of young. Like, there's still room for improvement. His defense got better last year enough where it seems like he's got a firm grasp on that job, at least until the high-end prospects for Oakland at shortstop start to get up there. So I like Semien a lot, too. I think that for a late-round shortstop, he's kind of the pristine-type guy.
Three outfielders going in the top 10, Mike Trout, Mookie Betts, Bryce Harper. How are you breaking that down?
Trout's number one, for sure. I think that he's first by a mile. I've had a lot of trouble this spring, though, deciding between Betts and Harper, because I know that Mookie's newer and he did better last year, but at the same time, people forget that Bryce Harper is actually a couple of days younger than Mookie Betts because he broke into the league at such a young age.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is just, it's mind-boggling. Harper had the injury last year. He added in stolen bases with Dusty Baker going there and, you know, loving to steal. I still have Mookie ahead of Bryce Harper, but I think the gap for me is a lot smaller than it is based on NFBC.
Who's your fool's gold in the top 20 among outfielders?
I'd never have Starling Marte ever on
really?
My rosters. I think that
pick 23, that's pretty high.
Yeah, the loss of power for me is tough. That's not a park that's really conducive to power either. So he's a fine player. I just think that the fantasy value for where he's going right now is not something I ever want on my team. And Billy Hamilton, I think that kind of, for me, goes without saying. I will never pay for him, especially where he's going 51.6 on NFBC.
But he's speed only to the nth degree.
Right.
He does
exactly.
Nothing with the bat.
And he's going to anchor you down in every other position, too, in a negative way.
How are you handling the injuries of, well, Pollock has always kind of got some injuries, J.D.
Yeah.
Martinez, and then who am I missing on the bottom? Ian Desmond. How are you handling those injuries?
I think right now Pollock's the one I'm most okay with. He on ESPN especially, he's like pick 62, which is absurd given the potential that he has, how good that offense could be with guys like Drury, Lamb, Goldschmidt, obviously, Peralta's healthy. I think that he's a really good pick. You know, the groin injury is a bit concerning, but at least it's not his elbow. So I think I'm okay with him, and it sounded like it was precautionary too. So I'm okay with Pollock. I'm willing to take a gamble on J.D. Martinez as long as he comes at a serious discount, because we don't know what the second opinion is going to be. It could wind up being he's fine. I'm guessing it's not that right now, just based on the way the Tigers are handling it. So I'm still okay with him, but I want to be at a pretty serious discount. And Desmond, just based on the timetable, I'm pretty out on him. I was talking myself into him right before he got hurt, so sorry if I jinxed it for you, Ian. But I think that, you know, I would need it to be super late for me to get him, just because I don't want that guaranteed lack of playing time, the potential for a loss of power, too, with an injury being in his hand.
Kyle Schwarber coming off the board 20th among outfielders, 78th overall. My theory is that people are not giving enough heeding or giving enough credence to the Jason Kubel factor. Big time knee injury. Didn't have enough time to show rust in the World Series, so there is some time off there. Obviously, people would be more amped about Schwarber as a prospect. But Kubel mashed, and then it took him a long time to get back, and he never really was great again. I'm not saying that it's going to be the same, but do you think there's any potential for Schwarber to have rust and not justify his draft spot?
Yeah, I think there's anyone with his strikeout rate, there's always the risk of that. You know, with his strikeout rate, he's going to strike out because he's a very patient hitter, kind of leads to that. I think that the reason that I'm still willing to take him is, A, he could be getting catcher eligibility. He already has it on Yahoo. It sounds like they're okay with having him catch. And it's 10 games, I think, in most sites for him to get eligibility, which he could get within a couple of months. So that's really not that bad. He's going to be batting leadoff, so tons of volume. It'll hurt his RBIs, but, like, I'm okay with that given the potential for extra dingers, extra runs scored that he'll get there. And it seems like in spring he's striking out a lot, but he's still hitting with a lot of power. So the ISO's there. I want to monitor his strikeout rate because I don't want him to be some outlandish guy in that department. So I like him where he's going. I think he's a really good selection. I would like him more if he had catcher eligibility from Jump Street.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, right now where he's going, I know that risk, like you mentioned, is there, but I still think he's worth it, you know, given the discount you're getting.
Who do you have hard eyes for outside of the real top tiers as far as outfielders, the non Yasmani Tomas division?
So probably, I guess, Jose Bautista. I think he's a little bit rich in my blood on ESPN. His ADP is about 60 there, but it's 100 on Yahoo, which is a really good place. It actually is cheaper than that even on NFBC. So I think that Bautista, he had his highest hard hit rate, I think, of his career last year. He had a really high fly ball rate. He will probably never be a good batting average guy again. But he'll be hitting at a really good spot in a good lineup still, even without Edwin Encarnacion. So the situation's good. The talent is good. He'll probably be DHing a lot to hopefully keep him healthier. So Bautista's kind of the guy I turn to there. Outside of that, I mean, I don't know if we're getting down into Byron Buxton and Yasmani Tomas yet, but that's kind of the realm where I start to dive back into outfield once again.
Yeah, Gregory Polanco is my guy. He's going 16th for outfielders, and I think he's going to have a big season. On to starting pitchers, and, you know, there's so many to dig through. So who are you out on this year as far as starters? Obviously, David Price, for a lot of people, is off. I wrote for Fantasy Pros today my four bust candidates, and maybe this will be really obvious to guys like you and me, were Steven Strasburg, who innings issues, Kyle Hendricks, and let's see, I had Kyle Hendricks, Tanner Roark, and then who else did I have? I'm going to have to remember because I just wrote it last night. Carlos Carrasco due to injury issues and innings issues as well. So those are the guys that I'm more out on. I'm a little bit nervous about Jake Arrieta based on how he pitched last year. But, you know, I don't like Kyle Hendricks going roughly the same pick as Jacob DeGrom. I take DeGrom all day if that's the situation.
I mean, I would take DeGrom over a lot of people. He's awesome. He's been great this spring, which kind of nullifies any concerns around that surgery he had in the offseason. So DeGrom is a guy I have ranked well above where he's going. So I agree. He's a guy I would target.
Archer and Strasburg are also going same pick. Archer and Strasburg are like, Archer's thrown three straight innings of 190 innings.
He's been good. Last year, the second half, he was really good. So I agree. And I think that the park there helps, you know, account for the fact that Strasburg's in the NL compared to Archer being in the AL. As far as the guys I'm avoiding, I agree on Arrieta. I'm not in on him. There were enough concerns before around his peripherals, like a declining strikeout rate, increased walk rate. I'm not going to get into that at all. I have no desire to. And I'm also lower on Chris Sale, I think, than a lot, because I don't know he's going to go back to being Chris Sale. You know, strikeout Chris Sale was a really freaking good pitcher. He just had those bad results that one year, and it caused him to change his entire philosophy. Mm-hmm. Like, I wish Chris Sale would talk to you, Darvish, about strikeouts, because Darvish is a guy who says, if I strike more guys out, I face fewer batters, that lowers my pitch count. Chris Sale, I don't think, grasps that based on what he's said. And if he's not going to be strikeout Chris Sale, being a left-handed pitcher in the American League East in Fenway Park, I really don't want him. So if he gets the strikeouts back, sure. But I can't justify him at his ADP without knowing that first.
All right, let's roll through relievers quick, and then we'll get you out of here. Tell me if I'm crazy. I'm taking Zach Britton as my number one closer over Chapman and Jansen. I'm head over heels for an 80% ground ball rate and a strikeout per inning with no walks.
I think I wind up on Jansen a little bit more. He's in a better park, a better team, I think, too. And also, his strikeout rate is just bonkers. So I wind up on Jansen more. But I think that Britton would be my second guy. I have him way above Aroldis Chapman, given the park, given the team, given, you know, overall numbers for Chapman relative to Britton. So I think that I go Jansen, Britton, but I don't think there's any problem with Britton over Jansen.
I'm out on Kimbrel after last year, 29% ground ball rate, a big drop there, lots of walks. I'm also out on David Robinson, who I don't think, or Robertson, excuse me, who I don't think is particularly good anymore. Who are you absolutely out on?
Probably Chapman at his price, just because I don't know if he seemed like he slipped a little bit last year with his strikeout numbers. The walk numbers went up a little bit too. Not a team that's going to get up a lot of save opportunities. So he'll bring down your ERA and whip, but I think that guys going lower than him, like Edwin Diaz is Aroldis Chapman, if Aroldis Chapman were on a good team, is like my perspective of it. So I'm out on Chapman. I'm kind of out on Kimbrel too. Melanson's okay. He doesn't really do anything for me, though, because of his low strikeout rates. And I'm concerned a little bit about San Francisco as a team. So I'm kind of not really into him either. But I think that outside of that, I love that tier of Diaz, Ozuna, and all those guys in there, too.
Okay, we're not counting Andrew Miller here. Who's your number one non-closer to steal a job? Mine is Nate Jones, who I think is fantastic and is already better than David Robertson.
Ooh, I like that. I mean, Nate Jones is awesome, so I would have no objections to that. I think that it sounds like Adam Ottavino might actually wind up not starting as a closer for Colorado, and given, you know, the hard road that is Tommy John, I'm not certain that Greg Holland will be overly effective. He has a Coors Field effect, too. So Ottavino, I think, could be a guy who ends up closing, but the problem is you're not going to get a discount on him. So I'll go Kota Glover is a guy currently a closer who I'm willing to take. I don't even know what his ADP is on NFBC. I can't find it. Regardless, oh, he's 74. He's 74th reliever, 522 on NFBC with a min pick of 198. If he were named closer today, his ADP would be 100. I will take Kota Glover every single time, and he's another guy I kind of formulate my draft around.
All right, let's wrap it with this. At the end of the season, who leads the Twins in saves?
Let's go with Ryan Pressly.
Oh, I like it. I was going to say Ryan Pressly. I'll go with JT Chagua.
Okay, I like that more because I love watching Chagua pitch.
He's a beast.
So I hope you're right. How about that?
Oh, thank you. Well, thank you so much for your time. Jim Sanis, Number Fire out in Boston. Thank you for hanging with us today. We'll have you on again real soon and see you tonight at the draft.
Yeah, thank you, Brandon. Looking forward to it. And good luck at the draft outside of the guys who I want to pick.
Yes, good luck to you, but not too good luck. You've been listening to Midwest Swing, part of the Cold Omaha and Zone Coverage Podcast Network.